Rick Delano is back with us, and we're going to talk about some incredible things with him. Of course, he has worked as a producer, executive producer, a consultant, but we're going to talk about faith and science, controversy, and so much more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Rick Delano. It was back with us on Coast to Coast. Rick was with me about almost 2 years ago, and Rick has worked as a producer, executive producer, financial consultant. He has done incredible things in the industry, and he produced a documentary examining the Copernican principle, the foundation of that metaphysical assumptions of the history of the human race are all tied together. And Rick Delano is back on Coast to Coast, and here he is. Rick, lots to talk about. How are you? Update me. What's new?
Hey, George. Good to be back with you. Oh, listen, it's really breathtaking. I mean, we put out a very controversial film 2.5 years ago.
The Principle, right?
The Principle, yeah. And it was the first documentary to examine this foundational idea that really brings the modern scientific world into existence. Because, you know, 500 years ago, if I told you that the Earth was going around the sun and rotating on its axis once per day, you'd call for the mental health professional.
Come and get him.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, if I tell you that it's not today, it's time to call them again. And how that was accomplished, how that fundamental view of our place in the cosmos was completely inverted is, in my opinion, the most interesting scientific detective story in history. And what has happened is that, especially over the last 15 years or so, we have finally become the first generation to be able to look out and literally see as far as it will ever be possible to see in our cosmos. We've managed to put up instruments, the COBE, the Cosmic Background Explorer, in the late 90s, the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe in 2001, and then in 2009, the big one, the Planck mission. And each of these missions was designed to explore this largest structure in the visible cosmos. It's called the Cosmic Microwave Background. And under the assumptions of standard cosmology, the Big Bang, the Cosmic Microwave Background is the oldest light in the universe. The first time that light became visible, that space became transparent, and photons were able to propagate freely through space, they left an imprint. And this imprint is what they call the surface of last scattering. And it is sort of like a map of the oldest light in the universe. Now, this was a fabulous discovery. It was considered at the time to be essentially the ultimate proof that we were right about the Big Bang. And as so often happens in science, it's one of the most fascinating things about it. Once they started to look more closely at this cosmic microwave background, certain things started to pop up that were so stunning that literally three missions were required because the scientists literally could not believe what they were seeing.
Was it changing their minds?
Well, it's funny because this is a really tough thing for the scientific community because the scientific community is absolutely persuaded that their model is right. And they have very good reason to believe that, by the way. The Big Bang has been a very, very successful model. Important predictions have been affirmed by this model. But that's the beauty of science. In science, it's not a question of, gosh, I got 99.7% of this right. That's not important in science. What's important is the 3.3% you got wrong, because that's where we're going to learn something. And it's brutal. Science is such a terrible and beautiful thing, because it's constantly in the process of tearing down what we think we know. And what we are tearing down now has the potential to change the world every bit as significantly as Copernicus changed the world 500 years ago. Because what they saw when they looked at this cosmic microwave background, it's supposed to be random. I mean, it's a Big Bang. It's an explosion, right? You don't see structure.
Not supposed to be order.
Exactly. Exactly. And instead, what they saw was that this cosmic microwave background was actually picking out a special direction
huh.
across the entire universe. But wait, there's more. It wasn't just any direction. To the absolute shock of everybody, I think, that special direction seemed to be related to two very important directions related to us here on Earth. Now, these two directions are, first of all, what we call the equinox. And the equinox is that time of the year where the sun intersects the plane of the ecliptic. The ecliptic is the path that the planets follow around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And twice per year, that plane intersects with our equator, and we get an equinox. And the two directions that were most prominently pointed out by the biggest structure in the universe seem to be aligned with the ecliptic and equinoxes of our local neighborhood. And that was so shocking. I mean, even all these years later, I think about that. When you think about how stupendously large our universe is, that the largest structure in the universe should be pointing at the two directions that are really significant for us here locally, it's just breathtaking. So because this is so stunning, for a long time, many, many years, it was really, really sort of viewed with a great deal of suspicion. You know, something must be wrong with the telescope, something. Maybe there's a dust cloud out there. You know, there's got to be something.
Something is.
It can't be real. So they spent the better part of 15 years. And starting in about 2007, I started to get fascinated. My partner and I started to get fascinated about this. And we started researching it and following the papers, and there was lots of research coming out on it. And about 2010, we said, this is going to stand up. You know, this is going to stand up. And if this stands up, this has the potential to change the entire world. So we started making plans to do a documentary examining these new observations and the impact they would have on this Copernican principle. And this Copernican principle is really very simple. It's really simple. It just says we're not the center of the universe. Up until Copernicus, everybody essentially believed that what we see happening above our eyes every day, you know, the sun seems mm-hmm. to go across the sky, and the stars seem to go across the sky, and you know, basically every human being believed that was really happening until Copernicus came along and said, no, that is an illusion. What is actually happening is that the Earth is rotating on its axis once per day and making an orbit around the sun once per year.
Was he looked at, Rick, as a heretic for saying things like
well,
that?
Well, he didn't so much catch the flack because he was very careful. He did not publish while he was alive.
He wasn't like Galileo.
Yeah, Galileo was the guy who caught the flack. Because, and this is kind of important, the stunning thing that Galileo did, you see, back then, physical science was all about just the surface, the appearance of things. You know, Ptolemy would add a few more squiggly-doos to make the planets show up at the right time. Nobody expected the planets to be actually doing those curly-cues, but he was able to predict when to plant the spring crops and when was Easter going to come, you know, all those things. They considered science to be something to just make the appearances all work out. The real truth of things for them was found in theology and in metaphysics and in philosophy. Those were the eternal truths that lay underneath the surface. Beginning with Galileo, and this is really a stupendous, important thing that Galileo did. Galileo was perhaps the first guy who actually came out in public and said to the Catholic Church, no, you've got it wrong. It is science that can tell us the way things really are. I'm not saying that the Earth goes around the sun just because it makes the model simpler. I am telling you that is the way things really are. And that was the beginning, really, of the battle between faith and science. Because science, for the very first time, stated that its method was adequate to establish the way things really are. And even if it contradicted the Bible, or it contradicted the interpretation of the Bible that the church had accepted, science could actually give us a better answer. And that was obviously a watershed moment in history, because Galileo won that war. It was really Newton who won it, you know, a little bit later on. But Galileo sort of started the war, And for the very first time, the smartest guys in Europe, you know, the Academy, they began to feel that Galileo had the better of the argument. And then Newton came along, and of course, there never has been, I doubt there ever will be, anything like Newton, because he was the first guy who actually proposed a full, complete, consistent system of the whole world. One set of equations that could describe a bowling ball falling down.
Or a feather.
Or a planet. The stupendous breakthrough of Newton is just, you know, it's incredible. And really, once Newton came along with his theory of gravitation and his mechanical equations for mechanics, essentially, the whole ball game was lost for the ancient cosmology. Essentially, nobody believed it unless they were believing it strictly on grounds that, hey, this is part of revelation, this comes from the Bible, every father believed it, the apostles believed it, every saint has believed it, it's got to be true. I am going to hang my flag on this based on the fact that this comes directly from God as revelation. But scientifically, Newton carried the day. Absolutely no question about it. And really, that begins a tectonic shift in the way we view the world. All of a sudden, the average guy in the street becomes persuaded that the Bible can be wrong and the church can be wrong. And really, when you think about it, the entire history of the modern scientific world, which begins with Copernicus moving the Earth from the center to the third planet out, right? Every single scientific advance since then seems to pretty much have consisted in the Earth becoming less and less and less and less and less and less significant. I mean, we went from being the center to being the third from the sun. Then we found out that what we thought was our galaxy was just one among hundreds of billions of other galaxies, and the vast, stupendous scales of the universe began to just completely, and so we become more and more and more and more insignificant until, with Carl Sagan, we end up being that pale blue dot. And of course, anybody would suggest we had any ridiculous idea of centrality or significance. That was laughable. That was ludicrous.
Rick, what do you think the Big Bang is?
Well,
And what is it? Because I've got to tell you, I've had physicists on this program for years, including the good ones, Michio Kaku and people like that. I still can't get the right explanation for what happened.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a reason for that.
No one knows.
they haven't got the model right. And they are so persuaded that they're on the right track, sort of like Ptolemy kept adding little epicycles, curly cues to make the planets come around at the right time. Well, they had to add so many epicycles to the Big Bang. Originally, George Lemaître, who was actually a Jesuit father, proposed that the whole universe at one point was collected into what he called the cosmic egg, and that all the matter and energy in the universe, because remember, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, so it had to all be there, right? And it was all packed together into this monumentally tiny, super dense, what he called the cosmic egg, and that the Big Bang was just the explosion, if you will, of that matter and its expansion into the universe. And that's the basic idea that we still have today. Problem is, the further out we go, the more we see, the less it fits. And this is the irony. For five centuries, we've become less and less and less significant. And as we try to make the Big Bang work, we have to start adding these epicycles. We have to smooth out the universe because the Copernican principle says the Earth is not in any special place. That is then generalized as the cosmological principle. The cosmological principle says no other place is special either. No matter where you go in the universe, you're not the center. No matter where you go in the universe, it's going to look pretty much the same in every direction, no matter where you look from. And that is the fundamental assumption that has to be true if the Big Bang happened, if the Big Bang is true, or at least the Big Bang as we understand it today. And, you know, obviously we started looking further out and we noticed that, well, The further we look, the more galaxies we see. Look in this direction, look in that direction. There doesn't seem to be any up. There doesn't seem to be any down. No left, no right. Doesn't seem to be any edge. So this became what they call the Copernican cosmological principle. Not only are we not special, there is no special observer in the cosmos. Anywhere you are in the universe is going to look pretty much the same. No left, no right, no up, no down. If that's wrong, the Big Bang cosmology that we have now is wrong.
And it could be wrong.
I would go so far, George, at this point. What I can tell you is this. What I put a film out about and got hammered for 2.5 years ago is now in the literature, and this is all within the last year. There have been many papers, and essentially what these papers are saying, and these are good scientists.
And wasn't there a boycott on your film, too? I mean,
we were targeted for extinction because we made a film about a very controversial subject about 4 or 5 years before the powers that be were comfortable. And then they found out that we actually hold to the ancient cosmology. Bob and I are geocentrists. We believe that the ancient cosmology is true. That's why we got interested in all these observations, because these observations were stunning and unbelievable for everybody in the world except geocentrists.
Did you attack religion or faith?
No. We tried very hard to point out that there is a potential for a very harmonious and mutually enriching relationship between science and faith. But the problem is, science is almost trying to replace faith, and faith is so afraid of getting its you-know-what kicked, like it did by Galileo and Newton, that they're almost running away from their responsibility to purify and to give guidance at the metaphysical and theological levels to science. It hasn't been a good relationship. And so once the observations, it became clear, when our film came out, we bet the film. I mean, we had just about finished the film, and then Planck was going to release its data. Most of the people in the cosmology community were expecting that Planck would make these special alignments go away. It would prove that it was a mistake in the telescope or me. And I had been, you know, working with my partner for years on this, and We found one particular research team at Michigan that we felt really had the best research on this, and they stood fast all the way through it. They said, we believe these observations are real, and Planck is going to hold on to them. And it did. And that saved my movie, because all of a sudden I had one of the most interesting science movies ever made, because we were the only, we still to this day are the only science doc that even addresses these observations. And yes, we were attacked viciously because, you know, you are challenged. You know, when you really think of what's at stake here, cosmology is the most interesting of all sciences because it is the one science that bumps up most closely against metaphysics and theology.
Right.
When you're talking about cosmology, cosmology is everything.
It's godlike, isn't it?
If you are going to have a viable atheist explanation for reality, you're going to find it in cosmology, right?
And no doubt.
And if you can't, in other words, if you develop your cosmology to the point where we have developed ours, we are the first generation to see this cosmic microwave background. We're the first generation to look out at galaxies and see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of them, and then quasars after that. And we've got the most intense expansion in our knowledge of the cosmos in terms of observations. In the last 20 years, we've gone much further than we had gone in all of history before then.
Hold on, Rick. We're coming back. We're going to chat more about faith and science. Do they interlap or not? And welcome back to Coast, Rick Delano with us as we talk about his work. Rick, do you want to be memorialized as the producer of The Principle? If somebody read your epitaph, what would that be?
Well, I would certainly say that the only things that I think I have left behind me that would be epitaph worthy would be my two sons and my film, The Principle.
That's right. And the controversy of The Principle, let's talk about that for a moment again. I mean, you went through a boycott attempt in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What did they want to stop you for?
Because there is just something about this question. And always has been. I mean, look, why did they burn Giordano Bruno at the stake?
Well,
Why did Galileo get house arrest? There's just something about this question. You see, I believe the reason is this. There are very few things, very, very few things that 99.9% of the human race can agree on. And one of them is that the Earth is the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, dummy. Everybody knows that. And it becomes very troubling, and it can really upset people to have such a fundamental aspect of their worldview start to tremble beneath their feet. But what the heck? We're living in the time when all the pillars are trembling, man. The political pillars, the financial pillars, the scientific pillars. They're trembling. And I just embrace that. You know, I think that's cool. And I think some people don't. And the reason is, fundamentally, there's one power in the world that is greater than all others, greater than military power, greater than financial power. It is the power to tell the young the creation story. Because that is the lens through which, for the rest of their lives, they are going to interpret all of the data of their experience. Now, if I tell you, George, that we live in a world that is the center of the universe, you can go outside and watch the sun go around us every day, watch the universe rotate around us every day, God put us in the center, you're going to have a certain kind of culture. And if I tell you that we are an insignificant pale blue dot, that we are lost in a humdrum galaxy, in a universe with hundreds of billions of galaxies that couldn't possibly know or care about us, well, that's going to be a different kind of culture. And the key shift in the West, the biggest idea that happened since the Gospels, was Copernicus's idea that we were not the center of the universe. And you really have to admit that that was the beginning of the decline of the Christian civilization, of the of Christendom, medieval Christendom, and the beginning of the rise of the modern scientific-based civilization. Now, the smartest guys in the world know very well that if this is coming back around again, as Lawrence Krauss says in the film, he said, is this Copernicus coming back to haunt us? Well, he's right, it is. And what's at stake here is monumental. Because if it turns out, it fundamentally speaks to the question of, do we live in a designed universe? It fundamentally addresses the question, is there a God? Because if you take the average guy on the street, and it, you know, in 5 years now, this is the square kilometer array telescopes, the next generation of radio telescopes, that are just going to be freakishly powerful. When these babies come online, we're going to get the answer to this once and for all. Because, you know, when I spoke to you two years ago, there was still a lot of controversy about these observations, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Not anymore. I mean, just in the last few months, you can buy a copy of New Scientist magazine, and, you know, they're matter-of-factly saying, look, we're at the point now where we have definitely established that not only the observations we talk about in the film, but a bunch of other ones they've found since are all lining up with these two special directions that shouldn't have anything to do with anything but our local system. Now, if those are actually cosmological effects, then the Big Bang Theory just died. And everything we think, like in our trailer we had Kate Mulgrew said, everything we think we know about our universe is wrong. Well, in fact, it is. Because if the Copernican cosmological principle is wrong, our cosmology is wrong. We do not have the right picture of reality. So we're down to the point now where they know that we are seeing too many things lining up along the special direction for there to be no up, no down, no left, no right. There is an up, there is a down, there is a left, there is a right, and there's only one way out. It's either time to start getting ready for a huge change in the way we view our place in the universe, or there is some undiscovered contamination that has affected every large-scale observation of the cosmos over the last several decades. And they have tried for 15 years to find what that might be, and they haven't got a clue. This is the moment of truth for science. It's the moment of truth for what we've all believed. You know, we live in an infinite expanding universe where every point is the center. Well, you know, everybody learns that and they think that's a profound thing to say. Guess what? That's yesterday's news. We have, in about 5 years, the square kilometer array telescopes will start to come online, and we're going to get the answer. The last chance to falsify this violation of the cosmological principle is going to come with the Square Kilometer Array Telescope. So within 5 years' time, and I'm just giving a heads up to everybody, the changes are going to be so profound, because I will tell you, I am very, very confident they will not turn out to be asymptomatic. There are too many different observations that are lining up. I mean, we're seeing not just the cosmic microwave background. We're seeing galaxy flows. We're seeing, you know, the right-handed spins or left-handed spins of galaxies themselves line up in a preferential way along this thing. There's something going on along this preferred direction that somehow is related to the ecliptic and equinoxes of Earth. Lawrence Krauss puts it in the film this way. It would mean that the entire universe was arranged around us.
Well, now, with all that in mind, where does intelligent design fit in?
Well, it's sort of like it's Copernicus in reverse. Now, certainly the fact that the Earth wasn't the center of the universe didn't in any way disprove God. But what it did do was it undermined the general belief on the part of the average guy in the street that the Bible couldn't be wrong and the church couldn't be wrong in interpreting it. And that had the effect of dramatically changing the relationship of science and faith. Now, what if it turns out that the fundamental idea of the entire scientific enterprise turns out to have been wrong? Well, it's almost the same thing in reverse. The average guy in the street, if the Earth is the center of the universe, that means somebody put it there. There is a profound intuitive response on the part of the average person that if the entire universe, this entire vast universe is arranged around us, that means somebody put it there. So that's what's at stake. And that's why there's so much controversy around the film. And that's why we really did have a pretty rough go of it coming out of the gate. I mean, a lot of things were written about this film.
Well, did you take the posture that there is no intelligence behind it?
No.
In
I
the
didn't.
Film?
We really tried to stick to the science on this one. I hope to make the follow-up to address the higher implications. What does it mean for us? What does it mean for my kids? What does it mean for our culture? What is it? We want to, that's a very powerful film, and I definitely want to make it, but I want the science to be settled before we do. But that is what we focused on in the first film. We wanted to basically give people a chance to understand that, while, yeah, I mean, you can... It's incredibly deep. You can go as deep into this as you want, but at the end of the day, it's very simple. Either the ancient cosmology is telling us a more correct picture of reality, which makes us almost inconceivably special in this universe, or else the new cosmology is correct, and we are almost inconceivably insignificant. Those are the two great stories that have shaped Western civilization. Both of them cannot be true, and we're... Most of us are going to live to see.
What about the multiverse theory now?
Okay, that's a great
idea. You throw that in, and then what happens?
Okay, here's the irony. All right. The old story is that when science was just getting going, you know, they used to call them the natural philosophers, you know, these guys on the continent and in England. They would listen to these theologians, and these theologians would be carrying on their endless debates about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, and they said, you know what? We ain't going there. If I can't see it, if I can't measure it, if I can't experiment upon it, I'm not interested in it. And that was the brilliant, brilliant thing that made science so powerful. We didn't argue about angels. We didn't have to get down and pray the right way. We got out our microscopes and our test tubes and our dissecting equipment, and we learned about what we could see, taste, touch, measure, and boy, that was a successful approach. Well, here's the irony. Now, in order to try to make the Big Bang work in the face of all these counter-indications, they say, well, yeah, this does look like a designed universe. This really does look like everything is really fine-tuned for life, and now we're seeing all these evidences in a special direction, and it's not supposed to be there. But hey, don't worry. This is just one universe. There's an infinity of other ones. We just happen to get lucky in this one. You know, there's a...
And we might be lucky in the other one. Who would know, right?
But here's the problem with that, George. By definition, we will never ever be able to do any scientific examination of any of those other universes, even in principle. Isn't it ironic? 300 years ago, they were laughing at the theologians for arguing about how many angels were going to dance on the head of a pin. We might just end up arguing for a couple of hundred years about how many multiverses we can never see, measure, or experiment upon in any way. And I submit that's a dead end. I submit that if they go down that road, it's not science anymore. Now they're doing metaphysics.
That's right.
And so if we it's so cool to live at this time because we most of us are going to live long enough for those square kilometer array telescopes to come online in about 5 years and nail this down. And I believe, and I think I have pretty solid grounds to believe, the square kilometer array telescopes are not going to make these alignments go away. There are too many of them. Too many missions have already seen them. They've already tried to explain them away. They're there. And once they are fully confirmed and they've ruled out any possible undiscovered microwave source or whatever, we got to throw away our cosmology.
How do you explain the order in the universe, Rick?
I am a firm believer in God, and I am a firm believer that the only way to explain this universe is to have it be the product of an intelligent designer. I am completely persuaded we will never have a fully workable physical experiment, description of the whole cosmos, trying to just build it up out of forces and particles. It just won't get there because there's more to it than that. Now, that's my opinion. I want to stress that that is certainly a minority opinion among the cosmology community. But nonetheless, I believe that the source of order in the universe is because the universe reflects the mind of its creator.
See, I actually thought when we chatted tonight in this interview that you were going to come across as saying that there is no divine creator.
Oh, no.
And
no.
I'm not hearing that from you at all.
Oh, no. See, if I would have said that, they wouldn't have tried to boycott my film in Chicago. No, we proceed from a... and we tried to keep the film very, very... I mean, nobody in the film is deprived of the opportunity to speak with their own voice. We have many different viewpoints in the film. But both my partner and I, as filmmakers and as men, are deeply, we're highly committed to a faith-based understanding of the universe and of reality.
That's critically important.
And we come from that ancient Catholic tradition that always did teach that the earth was the center and focus of creation precisely because it was the place of the incarnation of the Son of God.
But you can't answer the how.
No.
Nobody.
And I'm the first one to tip my hat to the cosmologists who've done an incredible job of attempting to erect the entire universe strictly out of physical, mathematically predictable operations and interactions. It's just stupendous. What they have built is beyond belief. The problem is, and the great philosopher of science, Karl Popper, said this best, science can never prove anything. All science can do is look for things that we think we know.
Mm-hmm. And try to corroborate it.
And then falsify them. When we make progress in science is not when everything's working brilliantly and beautifully. That's when science stagnates. Science explodes and learns new things when the things we think we know start falling apart. We start seeing things that shouldn't be there, things that don't fit our theories. That's when we make progress. So I have the greatest respect for the men who build the models. I certainly have no model. I look to them. I study them. I follow their papers. I talk to them in the film. What I have personally concluded is that we should give science every possible opportunity to build its universe without God, completely confident in the certainty that they'll never be able to do so, but that in the attempt to do so, we will learn so many, many interesting things. And as Max Tegmark, the great discoverer of these axis alignments from MIT, says in the film, he says, the pendulum has sort of swung all the way over with regard to the Copernican principle, and it's now starting to swing back, and you can really see that it is starting to swing back. And I think that's going to be very healthy.
In your film, you talk about some scientists who claim that they were duped, tricked.
Yeah.
What happened?
This is very embarrassing to them, and I love these guys. And what happened is this. These are scientists. Some of them are media savvy, some of them not. But we suddenly became the object of a campaign to try and tell these guys that they had been duped by a couple of crazed geocentrists who had put them into a film that made it sound like they believed in geocentrism, which was a complete lie, of course. But Larry Krauss, the first one, just basically immediately got onto NPR radio and said, "Oh, I never appeared in this film. They must have taken footage from me off the internet." And then, what a great story, huh? The story was way too great to be impeded by anything so inconvenient as the truth. The next day, Kate Mulgrew said, "Oh, well, I had no idea what the film was about." I mean, this is a woman who read the script for 3 months before we did the film. They got scared, is what happened. There was a huge media scandal, and they were none of them had seen the film yet, and they were told that they had been misedited, that they had been this, and unfortunately, and you know, I think to their embarrassment at this point now, because now the film's out, anybody can see they're not misedited in this film. This is not a film that tries to make them sound like they believe in geocentrism. That's just complete nonsense. And it's an excellent film, and I'm just so grateful that we continue to find an audience all over the world for this film. But it was very embarrassing, and they wanted to distance themselves. So, oh, we were tricked. Oh, nobody told us about it. Well, that really was the basis for the whole brouhaha.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually go to our website. We did a little free 20-minute mini-doc to really set the story straight. I mean, of course Lawrence Krauss appeared in our film. We have signed release forms. You know, we have signed release forms from everybody in the film. We basically set the facts in order. It's a really interesting story about how we were, basically we went from being a completely unknown little indie science doc to the third biggest story in the world in a 24-hour period. So it was tough for us. We had to fight through that, and we were damaged very, very hard. We had a plan to be in 150 cities, and our funding was pulled, and you know,
jeez,
we were supposed to collapse and fall apart, but we didn't.
People would think you were the Antichrist.
Exactly. No, we were talking, because really, think about it now. If the Copernican principle is wrong, we stand at the cusp where over the next generation or two, we're going to see as big of a change in the way we view our place in the universe as we did after Copernicus.
Rick, what's your website?
It's theprinciplemovie.com, and that's PRINCIPLE movie.com. And we have, we're always generating new content. There's always new articles coming out in the scientific press and also in the scientific literature. There's a lot of activity here. And really, over the last 6 to 9 months, the papers have just been stunning. They basically are admitting now that we have two choices. Number one, we have to come up with a new cosmology because the Copernican principle is wrong. Or we're going to have to go back and redo every scientific observation for the last 50 years because there's something contaminating the data to make it look like we're...
Well, let's see what the direction they may go in when we come back in a moment. Plus, we'll take your calls next.